Hey, wouldn't it be cool if that were true? Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome to the program. It's about 7 past the hour. Happy Valentine's Day. Did you do something romantic for your sweetie today? Buy flowers or something? Candy? Anything special? Walk out of Congress in a hissy fit? You know, anything special? Yeah? Oh, did you really? Bush tried to have sex with the entire country today. He tried to screw all of us, but the Democrats somehow, some way, with the help of the hissy fit Republicans, put a stop to that. Boner the Crier, the Republican minority leader, he walked out when he didn't get his way and couldn't make those nasty Democrats take up the legislation he wanted to vote on. You know, somebody ought to pass Weepy Boy a Kleenex and tell him he's no longer in the majority. Really, Boner, go home. Just go home. We'll have a bit of that for you and some more fear-mongering from America's sweetheart, who wondered aloud today why the House won't just renew his ability to continue spying on our phone calls and set free. Free at last! Thank God Almighty, free at last! The telecom companies, huh? Maybe it's because Congress was hoping his term would expire before the law did, since Raisin Brain is by far the biggest threat to American security in the history of this republic. As we've said before, George W. Bush is the terrorist. And we have a special treat for you tonight. On top of all this ugliness and weirdness and... We received in the email today something called True Love Comes and Goes by John Knott, K-N-O-T-T, in Oakland, California. And we combined John Knott's writings with a little bit of music from Leonard Cohen and a recitation from our producer and me, and we came up with a finished product that you are just going to love. And we're going to do that in about... 30 minutes. So stick around, all right? Leading off tonight, the Saudis, you know who they're going to execute now? Huh? A woman who was found guilty of practicing witchcraft and performing supernatural acts. That's right. The Saudis have decided to execute a woman accused of witchcraft and performing supernatural acts. The New York City-based Human Rights Watch said in a statement that Saudi Arabia's religious police arrested and interrogated a woman named Fawza Fali, and the judges who tried her in the northern town of Kuryat never gave her the opportunity to prove her innocence in the face of these absurd charges. How do you prove you're not a witch? Oh, that's right. They put you on a dunking board. Yeah, there you go, over a body of water. And they dunk you under the water. And if you live, you're a witch! If you die, you are innocent! They didn't give this woman that chance, you see. Her case underscores, I love this, shortcomings in Saudi Arabia's Islamic legal system. Shortcomings? Shortcomings? In which rules of evidence are shaky, lawyers are not always present, and sentences often depend on the whim of judges. The most frequent victims of this Saudi justice, of course, are women. You see, witchcraft is considered an offense against Islam in Saudi Arabia. Oh, my God. I laugh about the story, certainly not about the woman who has been sentenced to death. In this woman's case, the judges who sentenced her to die relied on a coerced confession from her and on the statements of witnesses who said she had bewitched them. Now, I realize this goes on in certain countries on the African continent, but usually those are in extraordinarily poor, so-called backward countries that are still suffering from centuries of colonialism. But this is Saudi Arabia. The woman later retracted her confession in court, claiming it was extracted under duress. Now, that sounds like something that Mukasey would say, right? In other words, she was tortured. And she said she was illiterate. She didn't understand the document she was forced to fingerprint. Not sign, fingerprint. There is no immediate comment on this request by Human Rights Watch to stop this nonsense from Saudi Arabia because government offices are closed on Thursday. So, and today is Thursday. However, the Saudi court has cited an instance in which a man allegedly became impotent after being bewitched by this person. Oh, I see. Okay. An appeals court ruled back in September of 2006, for God's sake, that this woman could not be sentenced to death for witchcraft because she had retracted her confession. But a lower court subsequently reissued the death sentence for the benefit of, quote, public interest, end quote, and to, quote, protect the creed, souls, and property of this country, end quote. And these are George W. Bush and his pappy's primary business partners. Son of a bitch. Well, after all my hysterics the other night about the Constitution going down in flames, thanks to Democrats in the Senate and who refuse to stand up to these pissy Republicans and this criminal regime, guess what happens? The spying powers that were approved by Congress appear likely to lapse this weekend because House Democrats, well, they just got their backs up and said, no, not going to do it. And at a morning appearance in the Oval Office, Bush pressed the House to quickly adopt his plan that the Senate approved 2 days ago to broaden the government's spying powers and give legal immunity to telephone companies, right? And the plan, according to the liar-in-chief, is absolutely essential because terrorists are planning attacks on American soil that will make September 11th pale in comparison. Democrats in the House tried to obtain a 21-day reprieve to allow more time to negotiate before the temporary measure expires tomorrow night. But the proposal to get that 21-day reprieve was defeated in the face of opposition from liberals, bless your hearts, who are against the surveillance plan altogether, and the conservatives who favor it. So House Democrats are now saying they may simply let the deadline pass without acting on the Senate plan. Wouldn't that be wonderful? If these sons of bitches are afraid to act, then let them demonstrate their courage by not acting. Just sit there, Democrats. Just don't do anything. If that's all you're capable of, then by God we'll take it until we finally have a legislature with courage, spine, backbone, and a dedication to the document to which you swear your oath. So yes, Democrats, just don't do anything. Now the fact is, the passing of this deadline tomorrow night will have no effect whatsoever on how, where, when we gather intelligence. Our crack intelligence community will still be able to intercept communication from whomever they want for a year. There's an extension already in it. And if a new terrorist group is identified after Saturday, intelligence officials would be able to seek a warrant under the more restrictive standards in place for 3 decades through the FISA Act. Now, what are those restrictive conditions? They have to go to a judge. Oh, and who is the judge? It's a Bush appointee. And how many times has the FISA court said no? Once, twice, out of several thousand requests. So what's the bottom line here? This is to protect Bush's ass from criminal charges, you see, for violating the law, along with the telecom companies, from protecting his corporate friends. That's why it's so necessary to get this through. So bless your hearts, Democrats. When you can't do anything, don't do anything. We'll take that. I swear to God, we'll take that. For all that you
never let me down before. Don't imagine you're too familiar, and I don't see you.
Turn on your nights when you turn off your lights. Go to bed with Mike Malloy every night on Nova M Radio.
Times of trouble. Where did that come from? We never could have come. That's back when we used to work for the Playboy Network, right, Kathy? I took a good time. It's about 21 past the hour.
Hey, I've gotta get my voiceover promos in there.
That's
when
true.
I get, so anyone listening out there, if you need me to talk like this.
Yeah.
Don't forget, coming
There's
up...
There's no 900 number involved.
Don't forget, coming up, a very short story by John Knott in Oakland, California, called True Love Comes and Goes, with a little embellishment by the Malloy production staff here. But anyway, back to this insanity today in the House. Andy McCarthy, who writes for National Review Online, really had a meltdown. He said it would be unconscionable for House Democrats to let last year's FISA extension lapse tomorrow. Here's what he said online. Well, it looks like the unconscionable is about to occur. I'm hearing from several sources that the House is planning to recess on Friday without taking up the Senate bill. That would mean the lapse of our surveillance authority at midnight. A lie. President Bush has to keep pounding this, as does Senator McCain. This is not politics, folks. For grown-ups, this is life and death. Woo! Andy, baby, take a chill pill. It is Valentine's Day. If it's that important, there's a simple answer. Very simple. Pass the bill and leave out the telecom immunity part. How's that? So simple, huh? Then come back and introduce immunity in a separate bill. Hello? Isn't that easy? And then if you got the votes for it, fine. Ah. And the so-called grown-ups, he says, for grown-ups, this is life and death. If it's life and death, why are the Republicans walking out of the House? Why are the Republicans willing to play with life and death in order to grant legal immunity to telephone companies? My God, which one is that, Kathy? Let's drop that one in. Huh? Which one? Here it is. Which one? Okay, here it is. This is John Boehner. There was a FISA debate of sort in the House today, and all the House neocons followed Boehner the crier out the door when the whiners didn't get their way. Ah! They wanted those stinky Democrats to pass the Let's Spy on Americans Act. And instead they were debating that stupid old issue of Gonzales and Harriet Myers, illegal firing, U.S. attorneys. Dumb Democrats, they just don't know what's best for the American people. The citizens want to have their private phone conversations taped, tacked, and turned over to the Bush crime family. They don't want to see the House pass contempt citations against Myers and Gonzo. They don't want law and order brought back to the Justice Department and the White House. Americans just want their phones tapped. What's wrong with these stupid Democrats in the House?
We have space on the calendar today for a politically charged fishing expedition, but no space for a bill that would protect the American people from terrorists who want to kill us. I think this is the height of irresponsibility.
Height.
It's an insult to this House, and it's an insult to the American people.
Oh, God!
The actions on the floor of this House today will not make America safer.
Oh!
It will not help us protect Americans from being attacked.
Oh!
Earlier today, the President announced that he would delay his trip to Africa.
Woo!
A long-planned trip. He would delay it.
Oh!
So that he could work with us to sign the Long-Term Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act Modernization Law into law.
Oh!
We will not stand here and watch this floor be abused for pure political grandstanding at the expense of our national security.
Oh! Bite
me! We will... We will not stand for this, and we will not stay for this.
Oh, goodbye.
And I would ask my House Republican colleagues and those who believe that we should be here protecting the American people,
yeah,
not vote on this bill.
Go
Let's
away.
Just get up and leave.
Yes. 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 Get out of here. Get out of town, you scum suckers. Go. 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 Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, there's a question. There's a question here. Where is it? Where's the damn question? Where's the question? I had a question. The question was, why didn't the Democrats take advantage now? The Republican thug bastards were all gone. The whiners and the criers and the neo-Nazis. So in that moment, why didn't the House consider, they had a quorum, why didn't they consider Dennis Kucinich's or Robert Wexler's articles of impeachment? Why didn't they go ahead and vote it? Why didn't they vote to impeach the son of a bitch? They had a chance. They had a chance. But remember, these are Democrats. If the most you can do, my fellow Democrats, is to do nothing. Okay, we'll take that. We'll take that.
Instead of breaking up.
Love when we come back.
Don't you say, need ya, need ya. Baby love, ooh, baby
Why is it that people send ugly things to the mail? There's evil in the world, but we can overcome evil. We're good.
I wish I could carry your smile in my heart for times when my life seems so low.
Oh.
It would make me believe what tomorrow.
Okay, here we go.
When today doesn't really know.
Sing along. It's about 25 before the hour. Malloy program on Sirius, Nova M, and just about any place else you can hear it on our Valentine's program. Back to Raisin Brain. We're going to go to the short story, short story by John Knott of Oakland, California, in just a minute. But we want to, you know, you got to take the bitter before you get the sweet, right? So back to Raisin Brain holding his little press conference on illegal wiretapping today while he tried to terrorize and lie everybody into voting for his criminal immunity and immunity for the telecoms. Just in time for Valentine's Day, little mini mine held his carefully planned and scripted press event to chat up his ongoing attempt to spy on your phone calls, protect his own ass, and cover for his telecom buddies. He praises the Senate for passing a bill that would give telephone companies immunity for the illegal government-sanctioned wiretapping, and then he scolds the House for not acting faster to pass this little bit of fascism. Because if they don't, the terrorists are going to come and kill us all in our beds at night. Tell me again how many terrorist plots have been foiled by his illegal wiretapping thus far. Anyone? Hello? Here comes the fear.
Senate bill will ensure that we can effectively monitor those seeking to harm our people. The Senate bill will provide fair and just liability protection.
What?
For companies that assisted in the efforts to protect America after the attacks of September the 11th.
Fair and just?
Without this protection, without this liability shield,
uh-huh,
we may not be able to secure the private sector's cooperation with our intelligence efforts.
Oh, no!
And that, of course, would put the American people at risk.
Oh, no!
The lives of countless Americans depend on our ability to monitor terrorist communications. Failure to act would harm our ability to monitor new terrorist activities and could reopen dangerous gaps in our intelligence.
Oh, no!
Failure to act would also make the private sector less willing to help us protect the country.
No!
This is unacceptable.
No!
The House should not leave Washington without passing the Senate bill.
Oh, please. Do something here to make me feel a little bit better. Can you, do you want to do one more? No? Okay. All right. It's the way he talks. First of all, the dry, he's talking about America's at risk. America's at risk. Then why the dry, droll approach? It's time for a break. It's time for a break. This is from John Knott in Oakland, California.
Oh, I want you, I want you, I want you. On a chair with a dead magazine. In the cave at the tip of the lily. In some hallway where love's never been. On our bed where the moon has been sweating. In a cry filled with footsteps and sand. I take this waltz, take this waltz. Take its broken waste in your hand.
This is the tale of an encounter arranged by God, a meeting with my own true love, my soulmate. I was sipping a latte peacefully at the Temescal Cafe on Telegraph in Oakland. Suddenly, an irresistible force jerked my head 180 degrees around and locked it there. There she was, awaiting me on the sidewalk outside. I stared hard at her. She had a brilliant pink aura, the aura of love. I stared harder, incredulous. The aura intensified and burned my right eyeball. True love, like a jolt through my heart. She turned to leave. I scurried as fast as I could, being butt first backwards, to try to catch her. She turned quickly and looked at me. I glowed in the radiance of her recognition. She spoke first. Her words wafted through the air like honeybees on a breeze.
Excuse me, sir,
she said.
But you're dribbling on your beard. Your right eye is burnt and smoking, and your head is screwed on ass backwards.
She had recognized me and initiated conversation. Oh, glorious day! I answered her, well, thank you for the perceptions, ma'am, and I apologize for the inconveniences, but they are as pebbles in a landslide of emotion. You see, I am your angel and you mine. Ours is a predestined love. We are soulmates, and this is kismet. She sighed, and her breast heaved softly like ripe peaches. She squinted.
Well, you do look familiar, but I don't think so. No. Hey, how many cups of that coffee have you had?
Mia Moore was going to need a slight push to waken her karmic memory of me. I can prove whereof I speak, I said. I know you well in my heart of hearts. I put my hand over my chest and began. Your favorite color is lavender, and you love orchids. She smoothed over her lavender dress and adjusted the flower in her hair. I closed my eyes and continued. You have kept a diary since you were 10. You wrap it in a purple cloth. You have charcoal sketches of starving African children on your refrigerator. You're terrified of butterflies. You have a collection of Diego Rivera paintings on velvet, and you become passionate on the beach. I opened my eyes. She was attentive and intrigued. Amour had touched her. I closed my eyes again. You dream of moving to the countryside, I pronounced, where you can play Mahler full volume at midnight while sipping amaretto in the nude. You read Anaïs Nin by candlelight. You like spaghetti in the morning. I opened my eyes. She was incredulous.
You've been talking to my ex, haven't you? That rat. I don't know who you are, but tell him his little scheme didn't work.
She, my soulmate, was opaque to the moment of a lifetime. I was obliterated. I stared down at the sidewalk. The earth began to rumble, then roared and ruptured. Telephone wires fell and sizzled fiendishly, sending their little messages into hell.
She did not know me, her own true love. I looked up at the sky. The moon, loyal guardian of romance, was unable to stand the strain of a tragedy so diametrically opposed to its essence. It stretched and stretched, becoming oblong, like an egg. Elvis jumped down from the roof above us. He threw away his half-finished jelly roll. "Don't be cruel," he warned, "to a heart that's true." Mahatma Gandhi crawled up out of a fissure in the earth, shrieking and wailing that there would be no world peace until our love was consummated. The earth rumbled some more. Walt Whitman stormed down Telegraph Avenue in a white-hot rage. This was a crime against poetics. He set fire to a field of grass. An icy Arctic wind swirled around us, freezing my heart, slowing it to a deliberate, solitary beat. Van Gogh emerged and cut off his other ear, placing it mournfully at her feet. She remained opaque to everything. I preached to her in desperation. "Now see what you've done," I lamented. "We can't argue with the logic of the cosmos. There's such a delicate balance between order and chaos. Our love is ordained. To contradict that would be like spitting in the eye of God. Come with me. We cannot dally. We have been traveling through eternity together, but we are constantly running out of time." She leaned against the glass. Her eyes were kind. Oh, God, they were kind. She put out her cigarette and spoke.
"You're on medication, aren't you? And I'll bet you've forgotten to take your Thorazine. You poor man, here."
She reached into her purse and handed me a $5 bill.
"Have some tea. Take a rest."
With that, she turned and left. She walked, oblivious to the rumbling earth, oblivious to the icy wind, oblivious to the sizzling telephone wires. She had ignored Elvis, Gandhi, Walt Whitman, and Vincent van Gogh. In stunned silence, I watched mine own true love disappear. Her ass swayed gracefully, like a palm tree in the wind. I wanted to weep, but the oblong moon had sucked dry all of my tears.
There's a concert hall in Vienna where your mouth had 1,000 reviews. There's a bar where the boys have stopped talking. They've been sentenced to death by the blues. Ah, but who is it climbs to your picture with a garland of frames? This one goes out to the one I've left behind. A simple prop to occupy my time. This one goes out.
There are people who walk across the street to a neighbor and say, "I'd like to just love you for a second."
Fire.
And then about 6 months later, they wind up in divorce court, right? It's about 10 before the hour. We thought that piece by John Knott was so good. We're going to play it again in the third hour of the program tonight, the bottom of the third hour, which will be 11:30 Eastern time, which will be 8:30 Pacific time. So if you missed it the first time or liked it well enough to say to yourself, "Damn, that was good. I want to hear that again." We're going to play it for you again at the bottom of the third hour. And thanks to John who sent that in. Nice piece. Back to Raisin Brain. Enough levity. Enough love. Enough romance. Enough with Trembling Earth and Elvis and the rest of it. Let's get back to the real world. Raisin Brain holding his small press conference on illegal wiretapping. Now, to make everything appear to be legit, Bush decided to answer a couple of questions from the crack White House press corps, starting with this one.
"Thank you, Mr. President. It appears with that deadline approaching that the House And the White House might be seen as being engaged in a game of chicken here, you know, playing politics with an important intelligence law. Those goddamn Democrats will do it every time, you know, Mr. President. If the law expires, sir, and something happens, wouldn't you be at least partly to blame?
You know, whether or not this is politics, I certainly hope not.
Oh.
I can assure you Al-Qaeda and their planning isn't thinking about politics. They're thinking about hurting the American people again.
Oh.
We, you know, who's to blame? Look, these folks in Congress passed a good bill late last summer.
I'm scared.
They analyzed the situation. They said there's a threat. And they agreed to give our professionals the tools they needed to do the job. The problem is, they let the bill expire.
Tomorrow.
My attitude is, if the bill was good enough then, why not pass the bill again? I mean, the threat hasn't gone away.
No, no. But the hope was that you might! Because you, Mr. Bush, you're the biggest threat to the security of this country, and Congress knows that too. You've got a bill. The FISA Act, from how many years ago? All you have to do, you creepy son of a bitch, is do it legally. And all you have to do is not prevail upon your friends in corporate America to become criminal lawbreakers like you and your whole corrupt, filthy administration. No, Mr. Bush! The Democrats in the House have said no. The most effective way the Democrats can, they just sat there and didn't do anything. And that was unnerving to John Boehner and those active, fire-breathing Republicans. What? You're just going to sit there? Well, you sons of bitches, then we're going to walk out. That's what we're going to do.
Okay, go ahead. Don't yell. Please just let us sit here. We got you yelling at us, John, and the president talking about terrorists, and the American people want us to impeach. And oh, Jesus, we're just going to sit here. Everybody sit here. Be real quiet. Be real quiet. Shh. Don't. It's not happening. It's not happening. It's not happening.
What's the matter with you Democrats? You sons of bitches! The terrorists are coming!
Please, make him go away. Make John Boehner go away. I can't stand this. It ain't happening.
Don't you dumbass Democrats know Americans want their phones tapped? Don't you dumbass Democrats know that the terrorists are coming? Jesus, what is it going to take to get through to you? Don't you dumbass Democrats know that corporate America has to be protected?
Please, please, go away. We're Democrats. We can't do anything. We're just going to sit here. Please, please. Where's my blankie?
Oh, good God, my 3.5-year-old daughter has more courage than these cowardly piglets.
Please, don't yell at me. Please.
And finally, a little Bush brown noser in the press packet posed a Bush-friendly question to Mensa Man.
Mr. President, I realize this is a sensitive matter, but I'm wondering if there's a way you can spell out for the American public what the practical impact may be if this law expires on our intelligence professionals, say, next week.
Clearly, there'll be a gap.
Oh!
And, of course, we won't be able to assess that gap until, you know, until the time.
The time?
Step one is, I guess you got to, come to the conclusion that there's a threat to America, or not a threat. I mean, evidently some people just don't feel that sense of urgency. I do. And the reason I do is I firmly believe that there are still people out there who would do us harm. People are wondering why companies need liability protection. Well, if you cooperate with the government and then get sued for billions of dollars,
yeah,
because of the cooperation, you're less likely to cooperate.
Oh!
And so it's a, to me, it's a, I guess one way to look at it is some may not feel that same sense of urgency I do. I heard somebody say, well, this is just pure politics. No, this is what is necessary to protect the American people from harm.
Oh, is that, I heard somebody say, well, this is just pure politics.
Yeah, you know who that was? Chuckle Nuts. That was one of the reporters about 5 minutes ago. That's ancient history. Well, that's right. There is no such thing as recent history.
If you cooperate with the government and then you get sued for billions of dollars, he said, because of the cooperation, you're less likely to cooperate.
Well, here's a thought. If what you wanted the telecoms to do was perfectly legal and above board, they wouldn't fear the lawsuits, would they, Chuckle Nuts? I mean, duh. So clearly you're asking them to do something criminal, or there wouldn't even be a debate. Oh, I get it. If you do criminal acts for the government and then get sued, or worse, your corporate officers might go to jail, you're less likely to do criminal acts. Oh. Let's all just sit here and do nothing. Don't pick on us, Republicans. Just go away. Oh, God.
No, this is what is necessary to protect the American people from harm.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chuckle Nuts, I'm a lot more concerned about the harm you're doing to the Constitution and to us plain old Americans with all this criminal data mining than from any threat from Al-Qaeda. Welcome back, 6 and a half past the hour, Valentine's Day. And it is such here on the Molloy program, such as the in the Iraq and the USA Americans. Remember her? Caitlin Upton? John writes in, hi, Mike. I seem to remember hearing somewhere that Bush's insistence on telecom immunity stems not so much from his desire to protect telecoms as his desire to protect himself from prosecution in the future. Somehow he figures that this immunity will also protect him and his cabal. Do you understand how this is supposed to work? Could you comment on it tonight? Thanks, John. Well, the only connection I can make is if there was no immunity, well, then the telecoms would be guilty of an egregious crime against the American people. Now, I don't know how you put a corporation on trial for criminal activity with any sort of penalty other than a monetary fine. So I guess maybe somewhere there is something about the corporate officers who were complicit in this criminal activity against the American public. Well, can you imagine? Before they were even indicted, their attorneys would immediately start demanding access to Bush and Cheney and the rest of these rat bastards in order to take depositions. And when the depositions finally were entered into the public record or into the trial transcript, it would become apparent that there was a conspiracy to commit these grievous criminal acts against the American public, a conspiracy conducted by, among others, George W. Bush. You see how that works, John? I don't know if I'm right or not. I'm not a lawyer. I am a talk show host. But it seems to me that that's what they're talking about. Jews in the UK. The number of violent attacks on Jewish people in the UK last year reached the highest level since records began in 1984. That's according to new figures released today. The Community Security Trust said the overall number of anti-Semitic race hate incidents fell by 8% from the record level seen in 2006. But, that temporary fall may be due to a lack of trigger events during 2007, which typically lead to temporary spikes. In 2006, the war between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon led to the highest number, recorded number of anti-Semitic incidents in the UK, according to this report. Overall, in 2007, there were a record 114 violent assaults against Jews, one of which resulted in life-threatening injuries. A Department for Communities and Local Government spokesman said, that's obviously some sort of government agency in the UK, quote, "We have one of the strongest legal frameworks in the world to protect people from discrimination or persecution on the grounds of their faith or race, and this was strengthened by the introduction of the Racial and Religious Hatred Act last year." So, the number of violent attacks against Jews in the UK reached the highest level since records began in 1984 last year. Another reason to find some way, somehow, to end this insanity in Israel and the occupied territories. Isn't that where this comes from? Isn't it? Or are we still in the Shakespearean Shylock the Jew, mentality, which I honestly don't believe. I can't help but believe that were there accommodation, if not peace would be better, in the Middle East, if there was a two-state or a one-state solution to all this death and destruction that's been going on in Israel, Palestine since the 20s, actually, but codified and made permanent since 1948, if there was some way to make it stop, that would be a good thing, wouldn't it? That would be a good thing. Jeff in Washington writes, "Mike, I've been enjoying your show on AM 1090 in Seattle for about a year now. Thanks. Isn't retroactive immunity an ex post facto law which Congress is specifically forbidden from making, according to the U.S. Constitution?" I don't know about that. I'm not a scholar of the Constitution. I really am not. But it would seem to me that that would make sense. Retroactive immunity for the telecoms, which is what the Bush bastard wants, would in fact be an ex post facto law. And if Jeff is suggesting in his email, I bet he already knows that it is unconstitutional. So what does that mean? Does that mean that the telecoms, if they get their way, that this act of Congress will then work its way before the fascist U.S. Supreme Court? And then what? Well, they've already declared corporations have the same rights as people. Oh, I don't know. Ron in Briarwood writes, "Hi, Mike. The Bush crime family never regards Americans as citizens. That would infer that we have some power in the system. Can't have that. We are considered consumers at every opportunity. After the 9/11 attacks, go shopping. An economy falling into recession, go shopping. The corporate mentality reigns." What else we got here? From Ross in Madison, Wisconsin. "So, Mike, if both houses sign off on this telecommunications amnesty, would it be feasible for Bush to request that Democratic Party operatives' cell phones and lines to the Democratic campaign headquarters be tapped? With no fear of prosecution, what grounds would the telecoms have for saying no? Maybe that's why he's so eager to get this through. Does anyone actually think the guys like Bush, Rove, Cheney, and DeLay and so forth wouldn't use something like this against their political enemies? Come on." Hadn't thought about that, Ross. Yeah, if all this telecom wiretapping horse crap and spying on Americans, if it's all legal, yeah, why not? Why not move the Watergate break-in into the electronic age? Wow. And this is from Andre. "Regarding your caller, Kathy, last night about all the Bush
veiled comments. I'm sorry, but I think what Bush and Cheney have done has succeeded in scaring us into thinking that they will declare martial law, that terrorists might attack or will attack. Whenever something is about to go against them, they bring up 9/11. I think it's all bluffing. It's a dangerous bluff, and they can bring down two office towers, they can stage something else. But you know what? Let them try to declare martial law. Let them try to suspend elections. More and more people are onto these bastards, and besides, these are old white bullies. They would cry mama and mess their pants in an instant once the veterans and perhaps the army itself retaliated. Sigh. Happy Valentine's Day, Andre. Well, thank you, Andre. And oddly enough, just as on the same day that the New York Times, in its lead editorial, calls for that it's time to vote contempt charges against Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton, lo and behold, wonder of wonders, the House does that. Didn't they do that today? Yes, they did. House passes contempt citation for Bush aides. On a vote of 223-32, House Democrats succeed in passing contempt charges against White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolton and former counsel Harriet Myers after Republicans walked out in protest. Gotcha.
Oh, leave us alone. We did do something, Mike. We didn't just sit here. We passed contempt citations.
And the damn FISA court approves whatever the president wants anyway, so why would Boehner get so upset over that? The whole basis of the FISA court, to begin with, was an attack on the Fourth Amendment. Butta, over at Crooks and Liars, says, so now Bush wants to further kill the Constitution. If the Democrats had any guts, they would fight to abolish FISA courts altogether. But what have they done? They've worked with the president in big business. I just wish while the childlike Republicans were not there, the Democrats could have pushed serious legislation through. Look what Newt did to Clinton. Why aren't we doing that to Bush? I'm really getting sick of Nancy and Harry.
One way you can help is to find a child who needs somebody older in their life to say, I love you.
You want to be careful with that one. Twenty-one past the hour. Regarding the contempt citations for Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton, it is pointed out here by Nick Giuliano at Raw Story that even though that might give some satisfaction to critics of the Bush administration, it's unlikely that these citations will lead to prosecution anytime soon. Attorney General Michael Mukasey recently told Congress he would not prosecute the contempt charges because Bolton and Myers were following Bush's order that they not appear. Son of a bitch, is that right? So Bush could order me to go kill somebody. And if I do it, I get a free murder pass? Well, I guess that's pushing it kind of into the realm of absurdity, isn't it, Malloy? But on the other hand, is that, Mom, he made me do it! Isn't that what that defense is?
Johnny, get in here! What is this I see? Mommy's good $10 Target vase has been broken.
It's in pieces on the floor. Did you do it?
Mommy, Bruce made me do it.
Oh, well, all right then.
So we've got the Bruce made me do it defense here. McCasey says he will not prosecute the contempt charges because Bolton and Myers were, well, Bush made them do it. Is there any regime you can think of in recent memory or the entire history of this republic that is more corrupt and filthy and cowardly and degenerate than this group? Really, come on, truth seekers. Is there anyone? That's right. There is not. Irish Dave says, Mike, do you think that during the discovery period, if, you know, the telecoms were put on trial, during the discovery period, what if the American people caught on to the fact that the telecoms started spying before 9/11? Now, I digress from Irish Dave's email. Isn't that the truth? Weren't we told when this story first broke by the New York Times that the spying did, in fact, predate 9/11? Back to Irish Dave. Of course, that would mean the spying didn't prevent 9/11. So either they knew and are responsible, and they didn't know and are irresponsible. Or spying doesn't work. Or fill in the blank. And Cindy writes, Mike, so what makes anyone think Bush is really interested in learning anything of value as it pertains to protecting the nation via wiretapping overseas? He fired anyone who could understand Farsi or Arabic. So who believes he's listening overseas? Oh, and the plot just thickens. Jonathan Schwartz, writing at tinyrevolution.com, regarding the car bomb assassination in Syria yesterday of Imad Munia. So Imad Munia is dead. Hezbollah leader Imad Munia, on the United States' most wanted list for attacks on Israel and Western targets, was killed by a bomb in Damascus. He was implicated in the 1983 bombings of the U.S. Embassy and U.S. Marine and French peacekeeping barracks in Beirut, which killed over 350 people, as well as the 1992 bombing of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires and the kidnapping of Westerners in Lebanon in the 1980s. As it happens, Jonathan Schwartz writes, one of my favorite things ever written by anyone anywhere was about Munia. This is from a 2001 article about him by Kenneth Zimmerman in the Washington Times. Imad Fayez Munia is a Lebanese Shiite, long considered one of the world's most ruthless and elusive killers. Once the Palestinians were kicked out of Lebanon in 1983, Munia and his two brothers, Fuad and Jihad, joined a new organization set up by Iran called Hezbollah. Its goal was to drive the Western powers out of Lebanon. Intelligence officials believe Munia is seeking personal vengeance on the United States and Israel for the deaths of his brothers, which explains in part his willingness to lend his expertise to operations organized by other groups. Munia's brothers were killed in retaliatory attacks in Lebanon, believed to have been carried out by Israeli and U.S. operatives. An Israeli intelligence officer told Jane's Foreign Report recently, quote, Bin Laden is a schoolboy in comparison to Munia. The guy is a genius, someone who refined the art of terrorism to its utmost level. We studied him and reached the conclusion that he is a clinical psychopath motivated by uncontrollable psychological reasons, which we have given up trying to understand. Wait, you're telling me that a young man, when his country was invaded by foreigners, got angry? And then when they killed his brothers, he became even madder? And he wanted revenge on the people who'd done it? Well, we'll put our best scientific minds to work on this, but I don't think we have any hope of understanding this bizarre freak of nature. He's simply too far outside human norms for us ever to comprehend.
Come on.
our neighbors are loved just like they'd be like to be loved themselves.
Before the hour, don't forget, coming up just about this time next hour, we're going to replay for you the little short story written by John Knott, who listens in Oakland, California, entitled True Love Comes and Goes. We combine John Knott's literary efforts with the musicality of Leonard Cohen and the narration of the Molloy Midnight Players, and came up with something that we liked. We thought it was real cute. We liked it. Apparently nobody else did, Kathy. I think I got one email.
Oh, that was kind of good.
We thought it was great. Heather writes from Boston regarding the FISA rejection stats. You know, how many times have people gone to the FISA court, the government gone to the FISA court, and been told, no, you can't have a warrant. Heather writes, I just happened to do a paper relating to this topic for a class last semester, and per the United States Department of Justice.gov website, from 1979 up until 2006, the FISA court rejected only 5 applications out of the 22,788 total presented. 5 out of 22,000 said,
oh, we need to have this, or the terrorists are going to get us.
Heather goes on, oh, and before any Republicard begins whining about not being able to catch the dangerous domestic nasties, the government can monitor foreign agents, and in some cases U.S. persons, through application of the FISA Act. And in emergency situations, they can obtain a warrant up to 72 hours after surveillance has commenced. Yeah. And isn't it a shame that most of us in this country, Heather, do not know that? Unless we have done, like you did, a paper relating to the topic in whatever the class was that you did this. Unless we do that, Or do some independent research, or have somebody whisper in our ear and point us towards a website, or what have you. Most Americans don't know this. We sit back and listen to these sons of bitches stand up there talking about how George Bush's hands are tied, and the terrorists are just sitting there in their caves waiting for the Democrats to sit there and go, ew, we're not going to do anything. So that they can then turn around and attack us with impunity. The bombs, the anthrax, the buildings. And it's all a lie. Jesus God, it's all a lie. Every single bit of this is a lie. The power exists now to do anything Bush wants to do regarding intercepting telephone calls of anybody, anywhere, anytime, anywhere on the planet, without legal repercussions. But what he wants, you see, is retroactive protection for the telecoms, which in effect gives him protection from a criminal conspiracy conviction? Investigation? What? I don't even know. What Bush has done and what the telecoms have done is in utter, absolute violation of the law. And why did we impeach Bill Clinton? That's right. He lied about oral sex in a deposition. Oh, my God.
And here sits Bush, on top of a pyramid of corruption unlike anything we've ever experienced in this country on an official level. Oh, sure, we've had it from the mafia and, you know, various drug gangs and, you know, immigrant gangs and, you know, the Irish and the Italians and the Jews and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But as far as a government operation of absolute, utter, total criminality, There has never been anything like this. And Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi say, no, nah, I don't think so. Impeachment's off the table. And did you notice, did you see any of the video the other day? This turned my stomach. It made me up my dosage of Prilosec. I swear it did. I happened to walk through the kitchen, and Kathy had on the little TV, and Bush was signing the handout bill. You know, the $600 is going to really turn the economy around. By Christ, we've got it licked now. Here's your $600. Now go spend it. I think I'll pay down my credit card bill. No, don't do that. Go spend it, you dumbass. You're supposed to go spend it. But there he was, signing that thing, and standing behind him with the most dung-eating grin on her face that I have ever seen. Her smile went from here to here, was Nancy Pelosi.
Hi, I'm Nancy Pelosi. Look, we got $600 for all of you. We Democrats are just wonderful, aren't we? Oh, my God.
You really can't blame her for the smile. You've read about the bad batch of Botox out there. Not her fault.
That sounds very catty, Kathy.
Catty, Kathy. They made a doll after me.
I really do get kind of twisted sometimes. Don't you, Truth Seekers? The White House has confirmed that Bush plans to veto legislation that prohibits the CIA from using torture. And the legislation also would bring the CIA's interrogation methods into line with the Army Field Manual. Bush says he's going to veto that. In today's White House press briefing, which we could have gotten for you, but I can't stand it anymore, Too Much Cappuccino Perino defended the veto decision. I think it was yesterday, as a matter of fact. Perino defended the veto decision by citing the age of... Now, listen to this. She cited the age of CIA interrogators, the ones who use torture. She said that they are well-trained professionals with, her words, an average age of 40. Now, U.S. soldiers, on the other hand, are too immature to be trusted, argued Perino. That's why they need the Army Field Manual. She said, here's the quote, this is done by the CIA, and it's done by professionals who are given hundreds of hours of training, who are, I think General Hayden said, an average age of 40, who are being asked to do very hard work in order to protect Americans. The Army Field Manual is a perfectly appropriate document that is important for young GIs, some so young that they're not even able to legally get a drink in the state where they're from. End quote. Wait a minute. Back up. Lava lips. Hundreds of hours of training? This is done at the CIA. Torture. And it's done by professionals who are given hundreds of hours of training? Dana? Did you really say that? Yes, by God, you did. I got to let that sink in. This is done, waterboarding, by professionals who are given hundreds of hours of training.
Before the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday, Director of National Intelligence Mike McConnell echoed Perino's comments, stating that the Army Field Manual is designed for young and inexperienced men and women in uniform.
Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island, sharply replied that it's unfair to, his word, denigrate the troops as if they're a bunch of 18-year-olds running around and the Army Field Manual has to protect them from their naivety and ignorance. You see, all members of the Army abide by the Field Manual, not simply GIs too young to legally get a drink. In a recent congressional hearing, Lieutenant General Michael Maples of the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, confirmed that the document, the Field Manual, is sufficient for the military. He said, quote, we believe that the approaches that are in the Army Field Manual give us the tools that are necessary for the purpose under which we are conducting interrogations. So apparently, under the White House logic, only people who are able to consume alcohol should be allowed to administer waterboarding. Jesus, God, will it ever stop? Will it ever stop? Perino is just absolutely the worst blob of DNA ever to stand behind that that podium with the seal of the great office of the President of the United States. She is absolutely the worst. Absolutely the worst. I've said it before, but she makes Nixon's press secretary, Ron Ziegler, look like, I don't know, like an absolute honest genius, doesn't she? All right, phone calls when we come back. We have some open lines here. The number's 800-989-1480. Come on, y'all. It's Valentine's Day. Show me some love. Don't you love her, man?
We've got great hearts and great compassion about our fellow human men and women.
Happy Valentine's Day, all right? Amid all the ugliness. There's still a little room for love. Let's go to your phone calls. Starting with Matthew, listening in Bedford, Texas on 1360 AM. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, Mike. It's so weird having you coming out of the strange talking box now.
I know. It's called a, repeat after me, radio.
Isn't that the movie about the retarded black guy playing football?
I think it's a different movie.
Oh, well. Man, what a Valentine's Day.
What?
I mean, it was, what a Valentine's Day. I was expecting to get some box of chocolates or roses from some random person who I don't even know who wouldn't send me anything anyway. And the Republican stage kindergartner-esque walk out of the Congress.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was crazy.
Well, no, that's our gift.
Oh, okay. Well,
That's our Valentine's gift. The little snots walk out in a hissy fit, and you know, something gets done. I think they ought to take their dollies and marbles and go home. Just stay home, the little rat bastards. What good are they?
I think that could be a common trait. They should just do this more often, and maybe the Democrats will actually get more stuff. Oh, wait, I forgot. The Democrats. Never mind. I thought we could actually get stuff done, but, you know, it seems that we need to have the Republicans disappear completely for us, for them to even get a half a back bone or anything at all.
Yeah.
Speaking of bone, how about that John Boehner? I mean, he seems to have gotten a really big, fat, throbbing problem. Get your head out of the gutter. It's like you listen to him and you think, okay, is this high school all over again?
Yeah,
or
well,
is this a guy who we elected for office? Wait, we didn't elect him. I'm sorry, I forgot. He's a Republican. Gosh, I just don't know my politics today, Mike.
Well, you're taking all this way too seriously. You really are. What you have to do, Matthew, is just look at this as a Valentine's gift from the mouth-breathing Republicans, and that in fact the Democrats, the other gift was today the American public got to see how the Democrats worked most effectively, and that is by doing nothing.
where it concerned the now, granted, they got the contempt citations passed after all the Republicans walked out, but prior to that, rather than fight Bush tooth and nail, rather than go after the FISA law, they just sat there with their thumbs in their mouths as a group and said, "No, we're not going to produce the legislation that you want. No, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to sit here." Mm. So I think an important lesson was presented, or an important example was presented to the American public. We have got to, the Democrats anyway, we have got to stop prevailing upon Democrats to do things, to be proactive. We have got to flood their offices with emails and however else we flood them, telling them to do nothing. Just sit there quietly, do some knitting, do a Sudoku or whatever the hell that's called. Do
play
some,
your PS3.
Say what?
Play a PS3.
There you go. There you go. Just sit there. Don't do anything. And that will piss off the Republicans to such a degree that they will have their hissy fits and walk out. Nothing can happen unless the majority party makes it happen. They can just sit there. So what was demonstrated to us today was the only way that this Democratic Party, under this leadership, in this Congress, will ever be effective. And that is if they do nothing. So we've got to stop asking for things to get done. Just let them sit there and do nothing. So today, Matthew, actually was a red-letter day. In addition to being Valentine's Day, it gave us all a lesson in the best way for the Democratic Party to conduct itself. Thanks, Matthew. I appreciate you checking in. Eddie is listening in Miami on WINZ. Hey, Eddie.
Hey.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question for Barack.
He's not here, but do you want to ask it to me?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
If Barack wins and becomes the president for the Democratic Party,
yeah,
what is he going to do for people with disabilities like us and my friend Ron Ziegler? Because he has a manic depression disability, and he wants to work. But if he does work, he'll be afraid that they will cut his disability and lose his benefits, and he can't marry his girlfriend because his Social Security will deny him because of his disability.
You know, Eddie, I don't have an answer to that. I don't know what Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton's position is on the issue of Americans with Disabilities Act or the continuation of programs that assist people with disabilities. I have no idea. Here's what I would suggest. Go to Barack Obama's website and then go to Hillary Clinton's website or call either of their offices in the Miami area, Barack Obama's campaign office or Hillary Clinton's campaign office, and ask them specific and direct questions. And, Eddie, don't let them give you, the Harlem Shuffle and move you off your questions. Just insist until you get an answer. That's the best I can think of, Eddie. Thanks for checking in, pal. Break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Valentine's Day on the Malloy program here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for hanging out. Coming up in about 25 minutes, we're going to play again for you after the break at the bottom of the hour. A short story by John Knott, who listens to us in Oakland, California, who sent this to me, and we put some music with it and some narration with it, and we want you to hear it. It's in celebration of Valentine's Day. And I guess somehow, some way, we've got to mention on this program the campus shooting at Northern Illinois University, yet another example of the insanity in this country. I stopped talking about mass shootings, I think, after Columbine. I don't know what to say about it. I really don't. It's the National Rifle Association. Maybe they can. I don't know where Northern Illinois University is, what town it's in. I understand it's, 40, 50 miles west of Chicago. Maybe the NRA can hold their next convention there, like they did in Colorado Springs after the shooting at Columbine. You know, I have no idea how to respond to the tragedy that occurred out there. What is it, Kathy? 20-some people wounded, 6 dead so far, including the perpetrator and more still in critical condition, in a goddamn lecture hall in a college. And how many state legislatures are pushing for laws to make it legal to carry weapons, anybody, carry weapons, conceal weapons onto a university campus? What is wrong with these pig bastards, these NRA types? What is wrong with them? And you know what they're going to say tomorrow? Hannity and the pig man and the rest of these freaks are going to, and disgusting displays of vomitus like Glenn Beck. You know what they're going to be saying, all of them tomorrow? Well, if some of those students would have been armed, they could have killed the shooter before he took out, because they love to use that kind of language, took out, put down, that kind of language, shooter. They love to say things like that. Makes their weenies feel a little bit firmer, I guess. It's disgusting. I don't know how to respond. I really don't. So I don't mean to sound as though that tragedy at NIU today is something we're not going to mention. We just mentioned it. I don't know what else to say. What are you going to say? I heard on one of the news reports the chief of police there, the sheriff or spokesman for the university, I don't know. They all run together, don't they? But I heard this person say, there's no way such a tragedy could be prevented. Okay. There is a way, of course, but it'll never happen in this country. And that is to get rid of these weapons. But of course, don't send me an email. I know we can't, because the fascists are taking over. I understand. I don't adopt the NRA position. The NRA is a clutch of psychopaths and potential murderers and strutters and God knows what. They're sick, sick bastards. By the way, is Charlton Heston still alive? Last I heard, he was sinking into the deepest folds of Alzheimer's. And I just wonder, before he checked out, if he said anything at all to kind of offset the murderous attitude that he displayed when he raised that flintlock and said, "Till they pry it from my cold, dead fingers." Well, one question, Charlton, is it time? I don't know what to say about what happened at NIU today. Tragedy. And there would be more. And you know what it's called? Sure you do. It's called collateral damage. Back to your phone calls. Rick is calling from PA, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Rick, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I think I'm about to hit a bad stretch of road, so I'll go real quick and then hang up.
Okay.
Right after I heard about this shooting up there, I switched over to the NRA news channel.
Uh-huh.
Their official position, you know, is, well, we just really shouldn't be talking about it right now. We need to wait until things calm down and Uh-huh. And people are more rational, which I assume is code to their members for, don't worry, our lackeys in the media will get people's attention focused back on Britney Spears and Missing White Woman of the Week and American Idol like they should be.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But I heard something that Anton Scalia said, and I'm thinking you might have heard it. Maybe you can tell me if I just heard it wrong. Maybe my brain is sideways from too much mescaline as a young guy. But did he say that torture is unconstitutional if it's used as punishment, but if we use it on people that haven't been convicted or even charged with anything because we think they have information, that's fine?
Yeah, he said that. He was in, I believe, in the UK. I think it was an interview he gave to the BBC, if I'm not mistaken. But he said it out of the country, and I think the entire 20-some nations in the EU, I think all of their parliamentarians and prime ministers and everybody just kind of rolled their eyes and collectively thought, Jesus Christ, the United States really is a fascist country. Yeah, he did say it. He actually said it, Rick. And Scalia went on to say that, or imply, I think, that if such a case ever came before the court that he sat on, he knows damn good and well which way he would vote. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it's
if there's ever a reason, I mean, why can't these candidates, the Democrats I'm talking about, have just got to get out and talk about that and just point out, do you want more Scalia's, do you want more Alito's? Because that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, but you got to keep in mind that Sammy the Fish Alito and John Roberts, these two, the newest minted right-wingers, they are on the Supreme Court not because of conservatives, not because of Republicans, but because of gutless Democrats in the United States Senate who absolutely refused to block their nominations and their confirmation. Absolutely refused. I think we just lost. Yeah, we did. Rick, anyway, thanks, Rick, for checking in. Yeah, it wasn't, and as far as Scalia and his pet dog, God, senior moment, Clarence Thomas. As far as Fat Tony Scalia and his pet dog, Clarence Thomas. There were enough enough Democrats in the Senate when those two names came up to prevent those two clowns, death clowns, from being elevated to Supreme Court status. Remember when George Herbert Walker Bush said that Clarence Thomas, who apparently was going to be given the so-called Negro seat on the Supreme Court, when George Herbert Walker Bush said, Clarence Thomas is the most qualified candidate to sit on the United States Supreme Court in the entire nation. Remember that? And then, of course, the Democrats, enough of them, went along with it. So, while I really fault Republicans and conservatives and this Bush crime family for just about everything vile and filthy and sickening that's happened to this country in recent history, sorry, Bush, but there is such a term, I fault the Democrats for allowing the Supreme Court to become what it's become. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Come up and pet the turkey if you want to.
It's about 20 past the hour.
In about 15 minutes, we're going to play for you again John Knott's little short story, True Love Comes and Goes, since it is Valentine's Day here on the Malloy program. All right, stick around. We played it at the bottom of the first hour, and we liked it so much we decided to play it again so that folks who missed it the first time can hear it the second time. And if you heard it the first time, lucky you, you get to hear it again. Gene is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Internet. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Mike. Happy Valentine's Day to you all.
Thank you. Same to you.
I went to read that Matthew Rothschild article you mentioned on InfraGuard.
Yeah.
And, boy, that was really amazing. And I wanted to thank you for covering that topic.
I can't believe that is happening. I cannot believe that there is an effort, and a successful one so far, to turn corporate America into nothing but spies.
Secret police.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Deputized by the FBI.
Yeah.
And as I read the article, there was a section in it about how they increased the size of InfraGuard, and that's by those who are already members, who are existing members, mm-hmm. recommending people to become new members, which is just like a secret society.
It is, isn't it?
It's just like a secret society, just like Skull and Bones.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to thank you. And I'll just keep listening because I never know what you're going to come up with next.
All right. Well, thanks, Gene. I appreciate it. You take care, too. Take care. Yeah, that story, if Infra, I-N-F-R-A, Guard. Oh, my God. James is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. James, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mr. Malloy.
Hi.
You use the word Jesus and God a lot, but I think that you don't take the Bible any more seriously than, say, your roll of toilet paper you use to wipe your face every morning.
Is that an insult?
Yes, it's absolutely meant to be an insult. As you insult,
you must be a Republican.
Just answer the question.
You must be a Republican, right? You must be a Republican to make a statement like that, to come into my place of business and make that kind of an asinine, half-witted statement. Very childlike, very much what I would expect from a Republican. I don't care if you live in Phoenix or in hell. That's exactly the kind of a comment that a Republican makes.
Well, you get up every morning and wipe your face with toilet paper.
That is so mature, isn't it? Go away, James. Don't call my program again. Dan is calling from Franksville, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, I like that. That was good.
First thing
I thought of when he says that you say God a lot and stuff like that, I'm thinking, well, that's the way he prays. Yeah.
I learned a long time ago. I don't even deal with right wingers because first of all, they're brain dead. Secondly, they just make me sick. I know Tom Hartman will play with them, and I know Rand. Sometimes, what are you doing? What are you doing, Dan? It sounds like you're blowing bubbles into your phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right.
Huh? God.
No.
That sounded scary.
Well, I'm excuse. I don't know. I didn't do nothing, but that's all right. But I talked to you in Whitewater when you're here, and I told you all my friends are reborn Christians, and I love talking with them. I've actually got to the point where I'm really actually good at talking about stuff like that. In fact, I don't know, maybe to change the subject a little bit, as far as these Democrats voting for the bills, I mean, I suppose it's okay to call them cowards, but I think they're just doing what they've been hired to do. I mean, well, I don't know if it's you or Randy Rhodes told how much each of them got paid from these telecommunication companies. I don't know if it's you or
Randy might have done that, but we did it the other night, yes.
Yeah, it was you. You know, they're hired, they're doing their job. It isn't cowardly. They're like, I'm not cowardly. I just do what I'm paid to do. You know, they're hired and stuff.
Well, but wait. There you go again. But wait, aren't they hired by the American public to write legislation that furthers the social
a fabric that stitches us all together. Oh no, I'm sorry. I'm talking about something from a long and distant pastime. When I talk about Democrats or Republicans sold their souls to Satan a long time ago and became the mouthpiece for corporate America. But Democrats are pretty much doing the same thing. So there are a few Democrats who are not. And there's a crop of Democrats out there waiting to be elected who I don't think will. They're the Democrats that are not being backed by the DLC or the DNC. They are Democrats who are struggling mightily to become members of Congress so they can bring this country back from the brink of fascism where we are right now, or corporatism, whatever you want to call it. And a partridge in a pear tree, you know. Who we got here? Thurman is calling from Washington, D.C., listening on the internet. Hey, Thurman. Thurman? Okay, I guess Thurman's gone. All right, we got to take a break here anyway. So I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and maybe take a phone call or two, and then we're going to share with you once again the story by John Knott. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, they go together like a horse and carriage.
Unless you're queer.
Too many docs are getting out of business. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
Oh, God, sit down.
Love and marriage, it's an institute you can't disparage unless you're gay. In which case you can ever get married. Try. No, it's not gonna work if you are gay. Absolutely, no, it's not gonna work if you are gay.
Conclusion, love and marriage.
25 before the hour. Mark is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Mike. You were asking for a little bit of optimism this Valentine's Day, and let's take some inventory. We still have a lot of tools at our disposal. I mean, your show is very powerful. We had a host here in Los Angeles about 2 years ago who organized 10,000 Los Angeles residents into a huge protest in Hollywood. About 10,000 people showed up.
Wow.
And the power of your voice stretches across the country. Somebody like you could bring out maybe a million people if it were a coordinated effort. You know, we can learn from Martin Luther King, who became so powerful that he was greeted by city leaders not to come in to protest. He had built up such a reputation, and it was just the power of the principles he was using. Another example is Mark Felt. The principle of power he used was to create the data and force the FBI to investigate. And with groups like 9/11 truth, if people work with groups like that to do their own investigation and present these truths out to the public, it forces the hand of the government to follow up and do the investigation. We are still powerful, and we still have tools, and we can learn from history about the men who used these tools effectively to bring down presidents and for civil rights. Martin Luther King was engaged in anti-war activity the very last year of his life.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's why they murdered him.
I think you're probably right. Well, you know, as you're talking, what I'm thinking, Mark, as far as a coordinated effort, yeah, you know, let's see, we have Randy Rhodes in New York, have Peter Werby in Detroit, have us here in Atlanta, have Jeff Farias in Phoenix. Who's in L.A., Kathy? Well, no, I'm here. Have Tom Hartman in Portland. Stephanie Miller in L.A. Wouldn't that be something? No, be careful, my lawyer thinking. All right, we're going to play this for you again. We got this from John Knott, who is a listener in Oakland, California. And he wrote this short story called True Love Comes and Goes, and we added some music and some narration to it. And we just think it's kind of groovy, groovy indeed. So we're going to play it for you again because, after all, it is Valentine's Day. True Love Comes and Goes. How many times has that happened to you, right? No, I'm not talking to the right-wingers out there. You Republicans, like that squirt that called me a few minutes ago, you wouldn't know love if it came up and bit you on the neck or something.
I want you on a chair with a dead magazine, in the cave at the tip of the lily, in some hallway where love's never been, on our bed where the moon has been sweating, in a cry filled with footsteps and sand. Take this waltz, take this waltz, take its broken waste in your hand.
This is the tale of an encounter arranged by God, a meeting with my own true love, my soulmate. I was sipping a latte peacefully at the Temescal Cafe on Telegraph in Oakland. Suddenly, an irresistible force jerked my head 180 degrees around and locked it there. There she was, awaiting me on the sidewalk outside. I stared hard at her. She had a brilliant pink aura, the aura of love. I stared harder, incredulous. The aura intensified and burned my right eyeball. True love, like a jolt through my heart. She turned to leave. I scurried as fast as I could, being butt-first backwards, to try to catch her. She turned quickly and looked at me. I glowed in the radiance of her recognition. She spoke first. Her words wafted through the air like honeybees on a breeze.
"Excuse me, sir,"
she said.
"But you're dribbling on your beard. Your right eye is burnt and smoking, and your head is screwed on ass backwards."
She had recognized me and initiated conversation. Oh, glorious day! I answered her, "Well, thank you for the perceptions, ma'am. And I apologize for the inconveniences, but they are as pebbles in a landslide of emotion. You see, I am your angel, and you mine. Ours is a predestined love. We are soulmates, and this is kismet." She sighed, and her breast heaved softly like ripe peaches. She squinted.
"Well, you do look familiar, but I don't think so. No. Hey, how many cups of that coffee have you had?"
Mia Moore was going to need a slight push to waken her karmic memory of me. "I can prove whereof I speak," I said. "I know you well in my heart of hearts." I put my hand over my chest and began, "Your favorite color is lavender, and you love orchids." She smoothed over her lavender dress and adjusted the flower in her hair. I closed my eyes and continued, "You have kept a diary since you were 10. You wrap it in a purple cloth. You have charcoal sketches of starving African children on your refrigerator. You're terrified of butterflies. you have a collection of Diego Rivera paintings on velvet, and you become passionate on the beach. I opened my eyes. She was attentive and intrigued. Amour had touched her. I closed my eyes again. You dream of moving to the countryside, I pronounced, where you can play Mahler full volume at midnight while sipping amaretto in the nude. You read Anaïs Nin by candlelight. You like spaghetti in the morning. I opened my eyes. She was incredulous.
You've been talking to my ex, haven't you? That rat. I don't know who you are, but tell him his little scheme didn't work.
She, my soulmate, was opaque to the moment of a lifetime. I was obliterated. I stared down at the sidewalk. The earth began to rumble, then roared and ruptured. Telephone wires fell and sizzled fiendishly, sending their little messages into hell. She did not know me, her own true love. I looked up at the sky. The moon, loyal guardian of romance, was unable to stand the strain of a tragedy so diametrically opposed to its essence. It stretched and stretched, becoming oblong, like an egg. Elvis jumped down from the roof above us. He threw away his half-finished jelly roll. Don't be cruel, he warned, to a heart that's true. Mahatma Gandhi crawled up out of a fissure in the earth, shrieking and wailing that there would be no world peace. Until our love was consummated, the earth rumbled some more. Walt Whitman stormed down Telegraph Avenue in a white-hot rage. This was a crime against poetics. He set fire to a field of grass. An icy Arctic wind swirled around us, freezing my heart, slowing it to a deliberate, solitary beat. Van Gogh emerged and cut off his other ear, placing it mournfully at her feet. She remained opaque to everything. I preached to her in desperation. Now see what you've done, I lamented. We can't argue with the logic of the cosmos. There's such a delicate balance between order and chaos. Our love is ordained. To contradict that would be like spitting in the eye of God. Come with me. We cannot dally. We have been traveling through eternity together, but we are constantly running out of time. She leaned against the glass. Her eyes were kind. Oh, God, they were kind. She put out her cigarette and spoke.
You're on medication, aren't you? And I'll bet you've forgotten to take your Thorazine. You poor man, here.
She reached into her purse and handed me a $5 bill.
Have some tea. Take a rest.
With that, she turned and left. She walked, oblivious to the rumbling earth, oblivious to the icy wind, oblivious to the sizzling telephone wires. She had ignored Elvis, Gandhi, Walt Whitman, and Vincent van Gogh. In stunned silence, I watched mine own true love disappear. Her ass swayed gracefully, like a palm tree in the wind. I wanted to weep, but the oblong moon had sucked dry all of my tears.
There's a concert hall in Vienna, where your mouth had 1,000 reviews. There's a bar where the boys have stopped talking. They've been sentenced to death by the blues. Ah, but who is it climbs to your picture with a garland of freshly cut tears? Take this waltz, take this waltz, take this waltz, it's been dying for years.
I don't want no part of this crazy love.
It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew tonight. Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix and also answered your calls. Billy Foster is our technical director. The podcast manager of this program is Ben Birch. Christy, Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolf is our writer in residence, although she doesn't live here. And attention, attention, attention. Pay attention to your telescreen. Phoenix, Truth Seekers, meet me and Scott Ritter, Saturday, February 23rd, in Phoenix. Tickets now on sale at 1480kphx.com. That wasn't even close, was it? Richard is calling from Chicago, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I appreciate you sticking me in there. I understood that was, you're a little tight. So I just want to say I enjoy your in rare form, speaking of Dina Perino. I personally have, I just want to make a comment and see what your thoughts are, but I really believe that the entire problem is that the administration runs the country like it does a corporation. They're at the top. Everybody else is at the bottom. Do what we say, and we're not accountable for what we do. And it explains everything. If you look at the way American corporation works, it's the exact same thing.
Well, if you remember, that was what we were promised when either just for, before Bush allowed the Supreme Court to hand him the presidency back in 2000, or just after. If you remember, the promise was that after all those terrible, terrible, nasty-ass Clinton years and all the scandals and all the terrible things, none of which had any substance to them whatsoever, but after all that, the Republicans were coming in, the adults were going to come in, and they were going to run it the way you run a well-oiled corporation. And everybody back in 2000 said, oh, yeah, that sounds just great, because a lot of us did have Clinton fatigue at the time. A lot of people in the Democratic Party were so thoroughly pissed off at him for doing what he did, with Monica Lewinsky, knowing that the right wing was on him like white on rice. So what does he do? Oh, well, he steps into the little closet, unzips his fly, and says, come here, baby. And the rest is history. So we were promised this, and this is what they've done. They have run the United States the same way the boys ran Enron.
You know, the thing that's aggravating about that is that, you know, a lot of people forgot this. It was an 8-year witch hunt with Kenneth Starr, beginning with, and I always ask people, what did it begin with?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find 95% of people don't even remember. It was an SBA deal for Whitewater.
That's
anybody
right.
Remember that?
Yeah, just a little land deal that the Clintons, in fact, lost money on. But the Arkansas project that was funded by these right-wing, murderous, wealthy sons of bitches pumped enough money into it, into the entire Arkansas project, which was to enlist the assistance of Arkansas state troopers who could provide the people doing the scut work the names and descriptions of women that may or may not have been associated with Clinton. And the Whitewater land deal was something that was just a miserable little deal that the Clintons lost money on. Everyone who was involved in it lost money on it. And it was Jeff Gerth at the New York Times who mainstreamed that story and refused to let it die. Jeff Gerth, who, like Judith Miller, was somebody who was planted at the New York Times to utterly and absolutely either destroy the Clintons or build up the Bushes. And now look what the Times has done now. They have turned over editorial op-ed page space once a week to the filthy Bill Kristol. It's just astonishing what the New York Times has done. Unbelievable. But it was Jeff Gerth who started that whole Whitewater story and wouldn't let it die.
Yeah, it's incredible, because one of the things is that how quickly they lose sight of facts. I mean, one of the things I know, and I've always argued this against the conservatives, is that I always admit to them, I said, listen, we're an inherent disadvantage to your arguments, because simpleton, right, wrong, left, right, up, down, black, white issues are the things that make sense to you. I said, we're pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
We synthesize information. We may change our mind because we might find more information out later.
Right.
We may, but it inherently puts us, progressives at a disadvantage, which the simpleton thinks it shows a sign of weakness. On the contrary, it's a sign of strength. But again, you're trying to convince somebody who can't understand that, who can't, they themselves synthesize that concept.
Yeah, and that is the essential difference between people who follow the religious model and people who follow the scientific model. The scientific model always is self-correcting by definition. As more data are discovered or if further discoveries are made, then what was truth yesterday becomes truth plus or truth canceled and new truth tomorrow or today. Whereas the religious model says, this is the way it is, was, and always shall be, and everything started 6,243 years ago. So, you know, the difference between Republicans and Democrats, let me change it, between conservatives and progressives is the same difference, I believe, between religious people and people who adopt for the scientific method.
Well, I've always said it, what it comes down to, it's the ideological difference between procedural approach to the Constitution or substantive. When you have a substantive approach like progressives do, again, it's a matter of issue per issue, for procedure. And what I always find hilarious about the conservatives with the procedural point of view is that they always have this heavy-handed way of looking at things. But I kid you not, the moment that sword swings the opposite direction towards their head, they want to change the rules in midstream. Every single time, without fail. They want the human element to be looked at this time. Whoa, wait a second. Right. I know I say a lot about drugs, but I had a problem. Can you help me out here?
Yeah. Well, isn't it, you put it well, Richard, and I appreciate your calling tonight. Thanks, man. Take care. Stay in touch. We'll see you tomorrow night, okay? We're going to sign off with, what's his name? Andreas Bocelli. We'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Mia luna, tu segui con me. Mio sole, tu segui con me.